I appreciate this opportunity to be here and to share Jesus with you and what he means to me. And I was mentioned by Clyde that I pastored before coming here to Portland at the Han Baptist Church in Han, Germany. Now, I don't know if you understand how prestigious that is, but Han, Germany is located in the Hunsrücker Mountains. It's a little village of about 200 people, and Hunsrück means the hen's back. And Han, in the German language, is a short for the word Hähnchen, which means chicken. Therefore, if you haven't figured it out, I was pastor of the Chicken Baptist Church in Chicken, Germany. There's a lot of prestige with that, and if you don't know where a Chicken Baptist Church is, you just locate the hen's back and you're close, and you're in the vicinity. While I was over there for those 3 years pastoring, it was a tremendous experience. Germany is a place with a tremendous history, and there was so much history to learn while I was there. Of course, there was a man who came out of German history by the name of Martin Luther. Luther was mightily used of God for some 500 years ago. You see, the world was covered with darkness, spiritually in every way. And God raised up Luther as a light in the midst of that darkness. As a matter of fact, God spoke to Luther's heart one time these words, "Und Gott sprach, es wird Licht und es war Licht," which translated means, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And the very light of God burst throughout the whole European continent because there was one man open and available to God. During that time, the darkness was so severe that the religious scene had become very corrupt. The church, the light which was in the church was very dim, and consequently all of humanity was in a deep bondage of darkness. During that time, there were men who went around selling indulgences. One of these men was a man from the city of Leipzig, which is now located in East Germany. His name was Johann Dietzel. He was commonly called Tetzel. And Tetzel would go around and sell these indulgences, and he would come into a city. And when he would arrive in that city on his horse and with his carriage being pulled behind the horses, he would set up shop and he would pull out a big chest and set it in front of the carriage. And then he set up a cross, and out from that cross extended two arms. He said that these arms represented the arms of the Pope. He would stand and he would preach and he would say to the people that that cross had as much power in it as the very cross of Jesus Christ himself. He would say to the people, "Now I'm going to open this chest and I'm going to ask you to bring your money. For you see, right now your loved ones who have died, they are in purgatory, and right now they are waiting for you to come and bring your money. And the very moment that that coin hits the bottom of that chest, immediately their souls will be released and they will fly off into heaven. And they are crying to you, 'Oh, drop the money, drop the money in the coin.'" And he would point in a very emotional appeal and say to the poor man, "Oh, poor man, bring your money, bring your money. Your loved ones are waiting in purgatory." He'd say to the rich man, "Bring your money, bring your money." He would say to the priest, "Priest, bring your money." Well, this went on for some time. He even had the authority. He was issued certificates of salvation, which held authority even in the courts of the day. And with those certificates of salvation, someone could actually, in court, be forgiven of a crime that they had committed. And so one day a nobleman, a knight, came to Tetzel and said to him, Tetzel, "Do you have the authority to forgive me of a crime which I have not yet committed?" He says, "There's something I want to do against someone, but I want to make sure I can receive forgiveness before I do it." And Tetzel thought for a minute, and he says, "I think I can arrange that. However, it's going to cost you a lot of money." And so the nobleman said, "Whatever it costs, I'll be willing to pay the price. He said, all right. So he paid a large sum of money to Tetzel. And after paying this large sum of money to Tetzel, Tetzel was leaving that day from that city, going to another city. The nobleman and some of his friends went and hid in the bushes at the edge of the city. And soon as Tetzel came out of town, they jumped on him and they beat him up and they took all of his money away from him. And so Tetzel, of course, called the authorities and had him arrested. And when he was arrested, he presented to the judge a certificate of salvation which gave him forgiveness of the crime that he had committed. And he was pronounced not guilty. Now, folks, I want you to know something. That's how dark the world was in that generation. And that's why God raised up a man such as Martin Luther to be the light of the world. But you know something? I believe that we live in a generation that is just as dark as that generation. I believe that we live in a world that's just as corrupt and just as bound by sin as those few hundred years ago in Germany. Every time I turn around, why, I hear of some preacher running off on his wife. It's amazing in our generation that a great well-known faith healer will die an alcoholic. It's amazing as I witnessed to a man and asked him if he'd like to invite Jesus into his heart. And he said, oh, I've already invited Jesus into my heart. Why, you see, I invited Jesus and now I'm gay. Folks, I believe that we are living in a generation that is dark. And the reason our generation is dark is because the light of God within the life of the church has grown very, very dim. I want to read to you some scriptures here this morning. Matthew chapter 5 and verses 14 through 16. Jesus said, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Jesus is the light of the world, and Jesus dwells within the church. And if the world is ever going to have any light, it's going to have to be through the ministry of the local church. It's going to have to be the church filled up with the light of God in it. And I believe that we as pastors and laymen who are leaders in our churches need to be filled with the very light of God, and our churches need to be that city on the hill. I like what someone once said, the brightest stars always shine in the darkest nights. And I believe though we live in a dark generation, God's wanting His star, the church, to shine forth brightly to bring the good news of Jesus Christ to a lost and dying world. Now, I want to share with you, for as one pastor, to many of you as other pastors and leaders of your churches, two things that I believe will enable our churches to be that light which God called us to be. Now, there are many other things, but I just want to share with you quickly two things that I believe we can do in our churches that will enable us to be that light that will penetrate our society for Jesus Christ. The first thing is, to disciple the fringes. Disciple the fringes. In Mark chapter 3 and verse 14, the Bible says that Jesus chose 12 that they might be with Him and that He might send them to preach. You know, I'm amazed at the call of the disciples. You know, if I would have been doing it, it's a good thing I had nothing to do with it, but if I had been doing it, I would have never chosen the people that Jesus chose. I would have gone to the theological institutes of the day and chosen one of the leading young rabbis, someone who was really sharp and intelligent and had a lot of charisma, someone who really was on the ball, who was kind of in the in crowd of the religious community. But you know what Jesus did when He chose the 12? He did not go to that particular group. He went to the fringes. He went to a man, Matthew, who was considered kind of an old sinner. Although he was a part of the covenant people, he was not considered the in crowd. Jesus went and called Matthew and said to Matthew, "Come and follow me." I'm amazed that he called Matthew. I'm amazed that he would go to an old fisherman like Peter and say to Peter, "Come and follow me, and I will make you a fisher of men." I'm amazed that he went to that type of person, that type of individual. But I believe that there were two reasons that Jesus did it. First of all, they were more teachable. They were more teachable. And secondly, they had more lost friends. The rabbis had grown into a little group all among themselves, and they had a little religious clique going, and they knew nothing about the hurts of humanity. So consequently, Jesus went out there where humanity was hurting, and some of those who were in the covenant, but they were on the fringes of the covenant people, and he called them and he chose them that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach. Now, I went to Germany, green behind my ears, and I know some of you think, "Brother Sammy, you still are green behind your ears." But I went there and I didn't know anything. I still don't know a whole bunch, but I went there, had been in evangelism for 10 years. You know, in evangelism, you go into a church and you preach, and whatever the pastor wants you to do, you just do it. And I preached, and I'd go in and I'd say, "Pastor, what do you want me to preach on?" He'd tell me, and I'd preach. And then I went to pastor a church, and the first Wednesday night, I'll never forget, my secretary came up and said, "Brother Sammy, what do you want done about this? What decision should we make about this?" And I, all of a sudden, I had to make decisions. And I realized that I not only was a preacher, but I had to be a leader among those people. And I got a little nervous about that. And then I went to my first business meeting. Now, you may not understand this. If you've not been in evangelism for 10 years and then have to go to a Baptist business meeting. I came over there. We were going to win Europe to Jesus. And after I came out of that business meeting, I said, "Man, we'll never win anybody to Jesus." And I said, "Man, you know, we might as well just forget this." I said, "Is this what it's all about?" And boy, I began to pray and I became discouraged and I wanted to throw the towel in. And I said, "Man, I just don't think we'll ever do anything." And so I started getting out my books and my tapes and I said, "Lord, you're going to have to show me something." I listened to a tape by Max Barnett, who's Baptist Student Union Director at Oklahoma University. And he encouraged pastors to just get a group of men and meet at some ungodly hour of the morning, get up and announce and say, "I'll meet with any men who would like to grow and know more about winning people to Jesus and about growing in the Christian life. I'll be willing to meet with you," and announce it at some ungodly time of the morning. And then see who shows up. And so I decided, I'll do that. And so I got up one Sunday morning and I announced, I said, "Listen, we're going to have a meeting on a Wednesday or Thursday morning. And any of you men that would like to grow in the Lord and learn how to win others to Jesus, I'll be willing to meet with you there." Now, I didn't know who was going to come. I was afraid that nobody was going to show up. I announced it for 6 o'clock in the morning. And so I figured, well, you know, maybe not anybody show up. But I knew that probably my deacons would show up. You know, I knew they'd be there. I mean, those guys were faithful. And it came that morning, I was a little nervous, and lo and behold, who should show up? I only had one deacon show up. I had 20 men show up, and you know what? Most of those men, almost all of them, were fringe people. People that nobody had ever taken the time or said, "I'll give you some of my time, and I'll teach you everything I know about the Christian life." One of those men was a lawyer. He was just a Sunday morning type Christian. And he came. He was the defense counsel on the base. And I began to teach these men how to give their testimony. I went through a little 4-point outline and shared with them how to give their testimony. And then I had them to give it to one another. And then I said, "I want you to pray and ask God to give you somebody to share your testimony with." I got a phone call that week. And it was this lawyer. And he said to me, "Sam," he said, "could you be in my office at 10 o'clock in the morning?" And I said, "Sure." I got over there at 10 o'clock in the morning, found out what had happened. A young man came into his office. He was being kicked out of the military because he had drinking problems. And so he helped him, gave him legal counsel. And after giving him legal counsel, he said to him, he said, let me ask you something. And he said, "You can tell me to shut up anytime. This is off the records." He said, "But are you getting any help for your alcohol problem?" And he said, "Man, I've tried AA. I've tried everything in the world." And he says, "Nothing's helped me." He said, "Well, let me tell you what happened to me." And he took out his little 4-point outline. And he said, and he went through it and shared with him how he had come to know Jesus as his Lord and Savior. The guy said, "Man, that's just what I need. That's what I want." He said, well, I don't know what to do. My pastor didn't tell me what to do at this point. So he called me up and he said, Sam, could you be here at 10 o'clock in the morning? He said, can you come back at 10? I said, yeah. So we met there at 10. I led the man to the Lord. And you know what? He went back, told his commander what happened. The commander was so impressed with what happened in his life. The commander called Ken and said to him, he said, listen, he said, could you handle another person? He said, sure. And he sent him another person over. And you know what? That next Sunday morning, we had six families in our church as a result of that one little old testimony, including the commander. Then there was another guy, old Ed. He had a big old laugh. Used to laugh and barrel. And old Ed, he just drove by our church one day and all the cars, we were growing, all the cars were in the parking lot and down the street. He drove by and he saw it and he came in, gave his life to Jesus Christ. Before I left, Ed became a part of that men's meeting. And before I left, you know what happened? Old Ed said, Sam, I want to bring you out to eat, you and your wife, me and my crew. He was a crew chief. He said, I want to bring you out to eat. And we went out to eat with Ed and his crew. And you know what? Every single man on his crew, he had personally led to Jesus Christ and they had joined our church by baptism. And I could go through every single one of those 20 men. Jerry Anderson, he told me, he was a young engineer. He said, Sam, he became a part of that group of men. And he said, man, I believe that I have failed God if I leave this base and I've not led someone to Jesus and taught them how to win the rest of the people to Jesus. You know what? He did it. Matter of fact, he led a guy to the Lord who was a runner, and he said, Sam, I hear you run. I said, yeah. He said, can I run with you? I said, sure. We went out jogging. I should have said I jog, not run. He ran. I jogged. And he said, do you mind if I bring something? You know, he had all the runner, his runner friends on the base. He said, you mind if they run with us? I said, sure. I said, but look, man, I said, you know, I'm slow. He said, we'll slow down for you. They slowed down to 7-minute miles, and man, I was about to die. And you know, I was out there running, they'd say, Sam, tell them more now. Tell them about how Jesus died. Sam, they had this question about the Bible. What's the answer to that? I said, well, so then I will, you know. And man, I shared Jesus with those guys, and they got saved. You know where Jerry is today? Jerry's studying at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. They go in the ministry. And listen, every single one of those men, our church quadrupled in size in 2.5 years. God just moved, and it exploded, and tremendous things happened. And as I look back on it, I've said, God, how did it happen? God, how did it happen? And I'm convinced that it happened through those 15 to 20 men. Who were fringe people, who didn't know anything else, who had just blew their minds that a preacher would actually take time to teach them how to witness. And they were teachable, and they were hungry. They wanted to know more. But I believe that it wasn't just in the fact that Jesus chose the fringe people. I believe that Jesus issued them a command and a call. And that call was a call of discipleship. Now, I want you to know in our generation, the call of discipleship is not like the call of discipleship in Jesus' day. Why, when we call people to discipleship, we tell them, follow Jesus, and you'll be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Isn't that right? When Jesus came, he didn't say that. You know what he said? He said, follow me. He said, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And if the world is ever going to be released from its bondage, it's going to be through the ministry of the cross. It's not going to be through any other way. And when Jesus calls us to discipleship, Jesus calls us to a cross. In our day, the cross is a pretty ornament on top of a building. The cross is a nice earring that ladies wear. The cross is a beautiful piece of jewelry, but in the day of Jesus, it were not so. In the day of Jesus, the cross was a symbol of suffering. It was the epitome of hurt. It was shame. It was despised. It was the symbol of death itself. And when Jesus called his men to discipleship, he said, come after me and take up your cross. Take up the symbol of suffering. Take up the symbol of hurt. Oh, we've offered Christianity as a bed of roses instead of a cross upon which we carry. And I believe that if we're going to have life that's going to burst through this world, we're going to have to redefine what a disciple is. while I was in Germany in the midst of this great revival that God was sending to our church. We had the worst visitation program in the convention, our European Baptist Convention, and we were breaking all the records. And God was moving in such a mighty way, and churches were asking our men to come and share what God was doing. And we were sending them out. I had invitations to a number of other conventions, European conventions, Baptist conventions, to go and speak and share. And God was moving in such a mighty way. I was going to preach one Sunday morning when Abraham offering Isaac. I'd been preaching through the book of Genesis. And we were at our Baptist assembly grounds there, similar to Ridgecrest, Interlochen Baptist Assembly. I was elected that day program chairman. I was all excited and thrilled about the blessings that God was giving. When we came home from that assembly on Friday, everyone went to bed, and my wife and I went to bed. Everyone was asleep in our house except for me. I heard something in my son's room. I went in there and found my little boy. His eyes had rolled back into his head. His little arms were convulsing. His legs were convulsing. I picked him up, and I began to cry unto the Lord. Nothing like that had ever happened. And I went and called for my wife. We rushed him to the hospital. The hospital was a medical doctor that I had been discipling, working with from our church. And we brought him in. One half of his face was paralyzed. He couldn't move. We had to bring him, and because it was a military hospital and we were civilian, we could not bring him on a regular basis to that hospital. We got one emergency treatment. They were sent off to the big hospital in Wiesbaden, West Germany. And there they ran tests. The neurologist called back to our base and talked with this medical doctor who was in our church. And he asked, he said, "Is that young man completely retarded? He should have absolutely no use of any of his limbs." Of course, he wasn't. But we went through for the next year a literal hell. We didn't have access to the American doctors. To go to a German neurological center would have cost us in the thousands of dollars, which we did not have. On one hand, we were seeing revival in our church, and God was blessing in such a mighty way. And on the other hand, there was such hurt in my life. Finally, I had to come back to the United States for a month to have neurological workup done. Our church gave me a month's leave to come back to have that done. I came back. The doctors put him on some medication. He began to react to the medication. And there we were again, left in Germany without any kind of medical help. And you can't imagine the hurt that just went through night after night. We'd be up all night long, my little boy, and then the next day I'd have to go out and minister to people. And there was such deep hurt. Eventually, we had to come back to the United States because of that. But I want to share something with you folks. You know what I discovered? I discovered a whole new realm of ministry. Because you see, in the midst of that hurt and that pain and that agony that my wife and I walked through, I want you to know we discovered the sufficiency of the grace of God. We discovered that God could comfort us with a comfort that was supernatural. And you know what we discovered? We discovered out there in that community, in that world, was a group of people who were hurting just like us. The only difference was they didn't know the grace which came from the cross. Folks, I want you to know sin has a sting to it, and sin hurts, and sin kills. The cross does the same thing. The only difference is there's grace in the cross. And the world doesn't know anything about that grace. And you know what? We begin to go out and we begin to minister to people. Guys would come up to me, commanders, and say, "Brother Sammy, we appreciate what you're doing with the men on the base." And I didn't know what I was doing. It was because for the first time in my ministry, before they saw me as the pastor of the largest church, before they saw me as some prestigious person, but now they saw me as a community, as a part of the community of those who were hurting in life. And then they saw that the grace of God was sufficient. And folks, I believe that's where the power of the cross is. That's the power of discipleship and soul winning, is not that we have an escapism from the hurts of life, but in the midst of the hurts, we have the grace of God, and it's sufficient. Let me just close by sharing this with you. I was in Dresden, East Germany, I was ministering there to a group of young people. And right after the service, it was an underground meeting. It was unofficial, that is. It was in an old castle. And a young lady came up to me and she said, "You know, not long ago I gave my heart to Jesus." And she said, "Boy, it was great. But," she said, "since that time, sin's come into my life. And I've gotten away from the Lord. And I've lost that joy. And I don't know what to do." And so I shared with her 1 John 1:9. And we prayed together. And there she prayed. And when she prayed, she said something in her prayer that I've never heard before. At the end, she had a little phrase in German that went like this. She said, "Lord Jesus, I confess my sin. I turn from it. I ask you to cleanse me." And then at the end, she had this little phrase, "Lord, I surrender myself to you, egal was es kostet," which translated means, "No matter what it costs." You know what, after we finished praying, I looked around and all the young people in that group were on their knees praying. And I went around one by one to those young people and prayed with them, and one prayed and said, "Lord Jesus, come into my heart and save me." And at the end of that prayer was a little phrase, "Egal was es kostet," no matter what it cost. Another one prayed and said, "Lord Jesus, I surrender myself fully to you, egal was es kostet, no matter what it cost." Another one prayed and said, "Lord, set me free from this habit in my life, egal was es kostet, no matter what it costs." Another one prayed and said, "Lord, make me a witness, egal was es kostet, no matter what it costs." Left there and went down to Czechoslovakia to follow up on some young people we had shared Christ with. 6 of those young people had accepted Christ. They went back to their Communist Party meeting, stood up in that meeting and gave their testimonies of how they had met Jesus. They'd been thrown in prison for it. They'd evidently prayed the same prayer, egal was es kostet, no matter what it cost. Came back to Dresden, asked one of the young ladies, I said, "How's things going since you gave your life to Christ?" She said, with tears running down her face, she said to me, she said, "Sammy," she said, "because I became a Christian and joined the church, I cannot continue my education. I was the number one student in my class, but I cannot continue." And a big old smile came on her face, and she said, "But it's worth it. It's worth it." And you know what breaks my heart? Here in America, it costs so very little. It costs so very little. I mean, we're not going to be put in prison. We're not going to have to go to jail. We're not going to lose our educational opportunities. As a matter of fact, it's culturally acceptable to be a, quote, Christian. And the very little that it does cost, most of us aren't willing to pay the price. And I've heard few pray, "Lord, take me as a pastor. Lord, take me as a staff member. Lord, take me as a leader in my church. Lord, take me as a young person. Egal was es kostet," no matter what it cost. And the cost of discipleship is the cross. But there's grace, amazing grace, in that cross.